So this evening we did the funeral chanting for George Sharp. It's one of those kind of passings that like a passing of an era, because he was the person who invited Ajahn Chah and Ajahn Sumedho to England to establish the Sangha. He was in there in England. He was the president of the English Sangha Trust at that time, and was involved for, of course, for many, many years. And he stepped down from the trust, but he was always involved with the community there. And he was about the same age as Lopa Sumedho. Also hearing from Ajahn Asoka, and then hearing from others. yeah, he just passed very brightly, quite present and comforting his son as he's passing, and Joseph Capel had talked with him. the day before he passed, because he got his diagnosis. And Joseph was saying that he was, it was just great conversation. They were in pretty regular contact. Said, yeah, George was very, really bright, really happy, very upbeat. So it's an exemplary way of facing. It's like yesterday, Ajahn, last night, Ajahn Yaniko's talk is emphasizing the importance of recollecting these fundamental truths. And there's just a difference when somebody really internalizes truth and faces it, and when they're it's kind of left unresolved or pushed away or hidden from view. We'd like things to be hidden from view. We just want to see what we would. How things would be in our fantasy world. But that's the whole point of the Buddha's teachings, is to give us a window into truth, and that's the the idiom that is used to kind of denote the kind of insight into truth and liberating truth, liberating insight. Yatha bhuta jnana dasana, knowledge and vision of the way things truly are. And so that just that willingness to keep reflecting and looking, and this is the way things truly are. And as things become clear, then there's a release and the ease of heart. Something else that has got my reflections going is yesterday I started to take a look at Ajahn Sujito's new book, Breathing Like the Buddha. I mean, I've hardly made a dent on it, but it highly recommend it. it's a book that Ajahn Sujito wrote on mindfulness of breathing. He said it started out as an essay, and of course turned into a book, which is, as is the way things are, with something so fundamental to our practice, is that mindfulness of breathing. Because it really does cover every aspect of our practice. Right? We can use it in all aspects of our practice. And from calming and settling to insight. But also that, I think one of the things that is important to reflect on is that, say, like mindfulness of breathing, from a Buddhist perspective, it's not just a meditation technique that stands alone for, say, mindfulness of breathing, or for any meditation technique to truly be efficacious. It requires a grounding in our virtue and integrity, and an attention to fundamental goodness, an attention to the qualities of heart, like say the spiritual qualities, spiritual faculties of generosity, of kindness, of compassion, as well as the, say, the ability or the willingness to focus attention and reflect with wisdom, so that when the Buddha gives the instruction for mindfulness of breathing, that encouragement to, you know, sitting upright is both it's a physical posture, but it's also a mental, emotional posture. Just being upright, being really present, and that sense of approaching our meditation with some oomph behind it, in the same way that one, say, yeah, again, what physically one sits upright and is willing to not just slump and melt into the moment. That one carries an uprightness of heart with one, because of that commitment to integrity, to real wholesomeness. There's a brightness of heart that we want to be able to carry with us, and that's where all practice is an ongoing thing. It's not just from time to time I sit down and count my breaths or something, and that's my spiritual practice, or that meditation can't undo obsession over obsession with worry or kind of a mind that's obsessed with vengeance or something. I'm really going to get that person. You can't really. You know, you've got to be willing to turn to the qualities of kindness and empathy. So these work together. That go that mindfulness of breathing, of course, is a foundational technique, but it's also the technique of mental training that the Buddha gave the most, as well as for he himself saying that that was what he himself practiced the most. And so I'd say it's got good street creds. One of the things that I appreciate, of course, Ajahn Sujito starts the book more or less with a kind of a retranslation of the in his own idiom of the sutta, and there's some important bases of reflection there, because he trims down the personal pronouns, and that's really useful, because really in the Pali, it's much more verb forms. I'm not a Pali scholar, but looking at it, it's all mostly, say, verb forms and mental qualities that are spoken about, alluded to, as opposed to filled with the statements of me doing this, I having to accomplish that. It's more around and he brings it back to, let's say, one breeze in, short, breathing in long, or one nose. From the the breathing process, but really even that, it's just like knowing thus, breathing in long, there is a long breath, breathing long is a short breath. It doesn't have to be personalized. And of course, that's very radical, because certainly for most of us, it's all about me. We sit here and we get, it's me and my thoughts, me and my body, me and my kind of feelings could go here and there, me and my wandering mind, it becomes a kind of a struggle and a fight. But it really helps to cast that in that light of we're engaging in processes, in actions, in that sense of those first two stages are about the long breath, the short breath, and just that fundamental knowing, and then the rest of the sutta is cast in the frame of training, sikkhiti, training us, breathing, and as one breathes in, and that sense of experiencing, fully sensitive to the bodily formations, the process, or the whole body itself, sensitive to experiencing, fully sensitive to. I mean, there's these are verbs that are one can engage in that activity, and not get entangled in the whole self project of where one is. How am I doing today? And was just scoring oneself. Gosh, I'm not very peaceful today. I wasn't as peaceful as yesterday. That's what's tiring about human existence. This constant nattering of me, having that opportunity to step back and engage in that process of attending to the breath, attending to the body, experiencing the whole body, calming, settling the body. And that's the beginning, is because it really it's so helpful to get at ease with being in the body, being a body, and then one of the things that is inevitable when for the instructions that the Buddha gives. The nature of language is you have to say one thing after another, but the reality is, as we practice, the purpose of the calming and settling and mindfulness and attention is to get to have insight into its nature. Those instructions, the sutta that instructions that the Buddha gives are structured with the body first, then feelings, mind, and then dhammas or mental qualities, mental phenomena. But those mental phenomena can be applying that at any time in the whole process. And it's, even though it's sort of at the end, it's something that is important to be, because sometimes well, I don't know about anybody else's mind, but I tend to plod sometimes. I start here and I go there, and then you start with using reflections on the mindfulness of breathing, using the sutta, and sort of lift up a contemplation. With those themes in mind, and get to the end of the meditation, I haven't got very far in the suit to walking through it. I think it's important to have that flexibility of mind that picks it up and brings it back and reflects. And that's those last aspects of the discourse on mindfulness of breathing, on dhammas, the foundations of insight, it's called anupassana, and anupassati, usually it's translated as contemplating. Another translation is observing. And Ajahn Sujito, a translation, gives out a translation that I found quite refreshing. I haven't seen come across. He said witnessing, which is a really, I think it's a really helpful way of referring. Okay, witnessing anicca-anupassana is witnessing impermanence or witnessing changeability, witnessing uncertainty. As I'm breathing in, witnessing uncertainty, breathing in, witnessing change, breathing in, witnessing impermanence. This is, however, the texture of anicca stands out to one. That as one's breathing in, as one's breathing out, that attending to that sense of change, that sense of uncertainty, unsure, rising and falling, and so that there's that's really a foundational aspect of, say, insight that leads to relinquishment. And you know, it's a part of the aspect of, because the second aspect of these aspects of dhammas of the fourth tetrad in that sutta is a vilaga-anupassana. And that's a sense of dispassion, cooling. And it's when we see and witness this changeability, this uncertainty, sense of nothing's really a sure thing. There is this arising and ceasing constantly taking place, and there's a cooling and a dispassion, and it's not that one doesn't feel anything, but there's a clarity to that settling of kind of, because we get excited in both ways. We get excited about dreading something is going to take place. We get excited about how good something's going to be. But to have a coolness of heart, to just see really clearly, and that's it's grounded in the body, it's grounded in understanding feeling, emotion, mental formations. It's grounded in understanding the way the heart moves and shifts, and both its potential for peace and stability, as well as its potential for confusion and chaos. But then it's seeing it in the light of truth, of the way things are, and so that seeing, witnessing through that lens of anicca, of impermanence, of changeability, and then encouraging the mind towards a sense of cooling, of dispassion, a settling taking place. And that cooling and settling kind of matures in that sense of Nirodha. And that's the third aspect, Nirodha Nupassana. That is it's a really interesting word, because it's cessation is a very common translation, but it's also, there is a tendency to approach cessation as kind of a, like an ending, a cutting off, or you know, one has to chase things down to make them end, and that you know, we can get really busy with cessation. And you think, well, that's not the purpose of the practice or the teaching, and this is something that pointed out by a Thai monk in a scholar and practitioner, a Prapayuto, is that an equally valid translation of the word Nirodha is non-arising. So we can pay attention to the non-arising of, say, non-arising of dukkha. That's an interesting one. Rather than going around looking at all the dukkha and trying to make it end, or looking, paying attention to the non-arising of desire, clinging. You say, well, before it manifests, there is a non-arising. You think, well, that's a really interesting perspective. That's a really interesting angle to be attentive to. Can we pay attention to the non-arising of confusion? I mean, what would that be? Non-arising of restlessness or greed, desire. You realize, you know, before anything arises, there is a stillness there. It's already still. It's already settled. It's just that we buy into the arising. We buy into the becoming. The whole sense of self and me. We really invest in that arising. We get really excited about me being something or other. And to recognize that, underneath that there is a non-arising, there is a Nirodha. And yes, I mean, it's a valid translation of cessation. And sometimes it's helpful to pay attention to that cessation, because sometimes we are experiencing, say, either an interest or a drive or an irritation or a fear, kind of a worry, and then we can watch it, pay attention to it, allow it to cease, and we can be conscious. We can know that. We can witness that. But then we can also be a witness to the non-arising. And both of them, they complement each other. So it's a really interesting aspect of investigation that allows the heart to really become expansive. And it's in that expansive quality that the last section the last quality that the Buddha points to, patinisadhukarpasana. That's patinisaka is relinquishment, a relinquishing, a willingness to relinquish. Because we'll desperately cling to our miserableness just because, God, if I'm not that, what am I? Oh, dear. So it's recognizing that everything has to be given up anyway. can't really hang on to anything. There's an idiom that the Buddha uses, a phrase that the Buddha uses, that said it's a summary of the whole teaching. And if one sees this, one sees the whole teaching. If one sees this, one sees the whole practice. Sabbe dhamma nalana vinivesaya. Say, nothing whatsoever should be clung to. And so that's that sense of, nothing whatsoever should be clung. Everything goes. Everything can needs to be relinquished, and to take a delight in that relinquishing, that letting go, because that's where our real ease and peace and clarity really lie. It doesn't exist in the realm of a being becoming, of holding on to, of chasing after. It's this wonderful ease and that sense of releasing the burden and relinquishment. And it's an aspect of this. We can be doing that with each in breath, with each out breath, and it's also, I mean, as the sutta says, it's training. Say training thus, or one trains thus. This is a training, and at first it's little baby steps of just training to letting go a little, getting a feel for what that sense of dispassion, of non-arising, of relinquishment is, and then turning it back on all the other elements of the mindfulness of the body. As one breathes in, as one breathes out, mindfulness of feeling and perception. As one breathes in, as one breathes, mindfulness of the mind itself. Is the mind, say, is it contracted? Is it expansive? What's its content? What's its mood? Can it be seen for what it is? And of course it can. It says we have to train ourselves to reflect in that way, turn our attention in that way. So anyway, those are some reflections that have come up around mindfulness and breathing. I'll offer it for witnessing contemplation.